My name is Jeremy, and this is Good Beer Matters.
Every country in Latin America has its own craft beer movement. You see that there's the Belgian school, the German school. We would really like to be like the Latin American school. The Cadejo takes care of the people that usually goes at night, have their drinks. We are the Cadejos that are taking care of them, actually.
In a previous episode, we explored craft beer in Latin America. However, it focused on places that are hotspots for American expatriates and global vacationers. In this episode, my next guest guides us through a taste of Latin American craft beer from the perspective of the locals. We find great experiences at the intersection of craft and culture. These are the stories of us, of great food and the beer that brings it all together. For the craft and culture of beer, this is episode 137 of Good Beer Matters with brewer Bernardo Francisco Sequeira Delgado. Welcome back to the Good Beer Matters podcast. I'm here with a friend of mine, Bernardo, or as we call him, Bernie. Bernie, I'm so glad you're here in the podcast. You and I met in Bend, Oregon, of all places, judging the Best of Craft Beer Awards. Shout out to the Best of Craft Beer Awards. And we were sitting across the table, and what were we judging IPAs at that time?
Yeah, actually, there were IPAs.
There were IPAs, but it was like a bunch of different kinds of IPAs. Do I remember that right? But yeah, so you and I were there judging this beer, and then we got to talk afterwards and really start talking about culture and forming a little bit of a beer friendship, even though I'm from the Pacific Northwest of the U.S. and you're from El Salvador. But I just think that whole thing is cool. It's like now you and I will communicate back and forth. And if I visit you, we'll go out, and you visit me, we'll go out. You know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, great.
But welcome to the podcast.
Hey, yes. I mean, it's a pleasure to be here. And I mean, it will be a pleasure for everyone to come here in El Salvador. It's a really nice tiny country. Actually, I think it's the smallest country in the continental America. So, well, what we know as America, but you know,
sure.
what
I America's, mean. Yeah.
That's a thing.
It's not as small as Andorra.
Yeah. Actually, it's really small, but we're a country that actually we're beginning to be in like in the map because of a lot of changes that have been going on. The actual government that's going on right now has been implementing some things that we've been like a bit, how can I say this, but popular because of this. One of those things is like the Bitcoin thing that is going on. We're like the first country to implement the Bitcoin. So a lot of people are coming here to El Salvador to try this. So tourism has been going on a lot, and yeah, that will be a pleasure to welcome you guys here in our country.
Well, and I hope to make it there someday to not only hang out, but practice my Spanish, you know, go spend some time at the beach. And you know, when I look online at El Salvador, there are a lot of very pretty pictures, and I'd like to see it for myself. But before we dive more into El Salvador, tell us a little bit more about you and what you do down there.
Well, I'm the head brewer at Cadejo Brewing Company. Cadejo Brewing Company is like the first brewery that started in El Salvador more than 10 years ago. Like actually, this February, we just got 10 years. So, and I've been there for all of those 10 years, and it's been a really, really great adventure. We started, well, when the whole craft brewing movement was in a boom in Latin America, kind of like maybe 20 years after the US. And here we are right now, and we started also a restaurant, a chain for like what, now like 8 years ago, we started our tap rooms. We started with one tap room in 2015, it was maybe. And now we already have 11. So it's a lot.
I find it interesting that, you know, the American craft beer boom, you know, we could trace it back to the mid 70s, but it really got some traction in the 80s and a lot of momentum in the 90s and 2000s. And frankly, when we think about craft beer in the U.S., it's, and it could be argued that it's becoming an old story. One could argue that we're kind of reaching that midlife crisis in craft beer. It's like, oh, you know, it's 40, 50 years old, depending on how you measure it. What I also find interesting is the ripples, the ripple effect of the craft beer, the American craft beer boom, is still circling the globe. It's still reaching Europe. It's still reaching Australia. Still reaching the Latin America, and it's still as strong as ever. It's still as important and impactful as ever. Is that what you're seeing down there in El Salvador?
Yes, I mean, here in El Salvador, because for our history, because of our history. We have a lot of people over the U.S. because of the civil war we had in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of we call them like our foreign brothers. That's like the term that we use. That actually they started like coming here and they ask about this. And actually one of these people that were in the U.S. not because of these reasons, but because he studied there was my the CEO of Cadejo. He lived in the US for like 17 years, and he came over and he had this dream of having this brewery, and actually it was something that was really cool because a lot of people were asking to have more options. We come from a history also of having just one option of beer. Well, like from the same company. So mm-hmm. This was something like really big when it happened. And you can see it right now that every country in Latin America has its own craft beer movement with all their special, like, how can I say this? Like politics, or I don't know how to say that, but like idiosyncrasies. I don't know how to say that.
Idiosyncrasies.
Yeah, idiosyncrasy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually that's really cool because when you go to every of those countries, you can see like this, like how they see the movement. And because we are like more than 17 countries in Latin America, you can see that stuff. So it's really nice actually.
And that's one of the things that just fascinates me is, you know, so when we talk about the craft beer movement, you know, and it really stemmed from, you know, back in America, back in the 20th century, we had three breweries, we had three channels, and it was all pretty much the same. It was all homogenized, and a lot of people started traveling in the 60s and 70s, going to Europe, tasting, you know, getting a sense of that culture, the older culture for the first time, tasting the beer for the first time, thinking, man, I want to have this back home. Mm-hmm. And so we started trying to brew European versions of beer, but with our own take on it. Instead of brewing a British pale with a British hop, we brewed a British pale with an American hop and called it Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And it just kind of created a whole new, it defined the American craft beer palate for decades and still kind of does. And, but it was just because we took something from Europe and made it our own. What excites me about that is the idea that whether you're in Australia or El Salvador or back in England or Germany, and you're like, I want to make an American IPA, but with our own take on it. And so someday we're going to see that this is the El Salvadorian IPA, you know, the El Salvadorian East Coast versus West Coast IPA. To me, if you know, I find that idea just beyond fascinating, and I can't wait to see the day where it has that much nuance.
Yeah, actually, like for us in here in Latin America, I think we have like this purpose of having or being like, I don't know how to say, like the fifth school of brewing. Like, for example, like when you see in the Cicerone is cool, like you see that there's the Belgian school, the mm-hmm. German school. We would really like to be like the Latin American school, because we are using a lot of our fruits and the things that are really from our country. And it's something that it's something that we have as a purpose. And actually, there are a lot of people having these movements of having to include the guidelines of the BJCP, for example, mm-hmm. Styles like the chicha, that it's really from our country, like using the corn, that it's something that all of our ancestors used a lot. Like this is like something that you can see in every country. We're pushing to do that. So it's something that, yeah, well, when I studied over there in the US and I tried my first IPA, like it was 15 years ago. And I was like, okay, I have to do that. And I have to bring it to El Salvador and do this. Like how can a beer be this bitter and be so good? It was something like mind blowing.
Yeah. But it begs the question from a practical standpoint, from a brewing standpoint, is, you know, here in the Northwest, we have hops right around the corner. You're in El Salvador. You don't have fresh hops. You have to get, it's not going to be the same. So how do you, as a brewer, how do you deal with that?
Well, at first it's really expensive because we have to bring it from abroad, and not so many breweries have this possibility. And it's something that it's really difficult for home brewers and small breweries to get this from the US, not only because of the economics, but also because of the freshness of the hops and like the malt. So mm-hmm. sometimes that's a difficult thing, but that's why a lot of styles that we're also like researching over here and that they're trending are more like fruit beers, like I told you before. Yeah, like yeah. We're trying to explore more things like Gose's and Catarina Sour, that it's becoming like really important over here. Mm-hmm. Lambics with fruits. So yeah, I mean, that's why the Latin American school, it's something that motivates us a lot, because we can use a lot of sugar sources from the fruits or other like starches, like the yuca, for example, mm-hmm. The corn, but well, corn, it's kind of like everywhere.
Yeah.
But also, for example, we in El Salvador, like one of our typical dishes, it's the pupusa. I don't know if you know it, but we use this herb that it's called the loroco, and it's kind of bitter. And we used it as a replacement for the hops, and it was really weird. It was really nice, but it reminded me of the dish. So it was really weird, actually. But yeah, we're trying.
Well, and knowing full well that you know, I think it's perfectly okay that you guys don't replicate a West Coast IPA. Because, you know, really that's one of the things that I love is, you know, beer travel. You know, when you came to Bend, then you could go brewery hopping and taste the different beers from the different breweries. Like, wow, this is the taste of this region. I don't want to go to El Salvador and drink a beer that I can get in my backyard. It's like, you know, why go to Italy and I'm gonna you know, make my own spaghetti with a can full of a ragu. It's like, I don't want to go there and have a burger either. You know, it's like, I want to go there and taste that culture. So, if and when I come to visit you, I hope you don't hand me an IPA first thing. Hand me that Catalina sour or something that I can't get anywhere else. But that does beg the question, though, besides these ingredients that you'll put in the beers, what are some of the beer styles that you guys are specializing in at Cadejo?
Hey there, it's me, Jeremy, again. I forgot to mention that I also have a podcast with my dear friend, the incredible Julia Herz. Together, we've created the Sense of Beer Style podcast. It's the essential training for those who want to lead in food and beverage. We created prepisodes to cover foundational beer knowledge, as well as Stylecast to walk you through each category of the 2021 BJCP Beer Style Guidelines. If you work with beer as part of your job, then subscribe and listen so you can become an authority. Go to senseofbeerstyle.com to subscribe.
Actually, we're trying to bring a... because we were the pioneers in the craft beer movement here in El Salvador. A lot of these ales were something that we never had here in El Salvador, for example. So IPAs are something that are really like beginning to be popular. Actually, it was this curve of having people first telling us, this is too bitter, this is like... This is so harsh, and it was really weird because at first our IPA wasn't like one of the best sellers, but over the years now it has become the second best seller, and for much as so it's people beginning to have also like a bit of more information. Because of social media, they're seeing these hazy IPAs and everything. So, we try to explore a lot of the IPAs, stouts, and also these fruit beers. So these are the things that we're trying to see in our facilities.
So this kind of takes me into. Let's talk about the climate in the region. It's hot, it's humid, right? Especially relatively speaking to the US and most places around the world. I mean, you're not on the equator, but you're not that far off either, right?
No, I mean, like here it's around 28 to 30 degrees Celsius. That's around 80 degrees Fahrenheit or 85. Yeah.
Which is perfect, but when you factor in the humidity, then
it's then, really hot.
it's really hot. What kind of beers are most popular that sell the best, that just work with that environment, with not just the heat and humidity, but the food, the people, the culture, the music, the whatever you add to that? What beers work the best there?
Well, the blondes are really like popular here, like the blonde ales. Also IPAs are, like I told you, are getting very popular. Mm-hmm. Our best seller, it's a wit beer, so it has to do a lot with the name, because our name it has a double intent, like, so it's people ask for that beer because of that. So marketing was really nice in that matter.
So what's the name of the beer?
The name of the beer is Mera Belga. So Mera, it's like the, or I don't know how to say it, but it's Belga has like this how can I say it? Well, there is this word for the for the male organ.
Okay.
Verga. So we use that expression, mera verga, so that you are like the best.
Okay.
So this one has a slight deviation from the name.
And gotcha. So it's slightly naughty, but
yeah, slightly
just
naughty.
Like, exactly. It, but you know, macho.
Well, kind of. I mean, it's because people like that, and actually, a lot of our names are based on that. Our blonde, it's a honey blonde, so it's mm-hmm. called La Hija de Pooh. That mm-hmm. it's so it's like Pooh's daughter, mm-hmm. like from the Winnie the Pooh, but.
Yeah,
but it also has a double entendre. So
yeah, gotcha. No, I think naming the beer and marketing the beer is the first step. I think it's the name and the brand and the graphics that sell the beer. It's the quality of the beer that bring people back a second time.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. And so if you have a good name, especially you know it's adults drinking this, if it's slightly exciting, maybe a little touch naughty. We're drinking anyway, so you know maybe that's. As long as it's you know fairly respectful, it's not a bad thing. But awesome. You mentioned a couple light beers. Do you guys do any like Belgian style or any dark beers, despite being hot and humid?
Yeah, actually, we do. Our stout, it's maybe one of our best beers because of mm-hmm. the water that we use. We have a lot of. Mineral the water because of the volcanic ground.
Okay.
So this makes our water kind of like hard, and our stout like it's really good because of this. And we've won a lot of awards because of that. So we use we call it La Negra, that it's our black yeah. beer, and we also do some seasonals for. Quadruples and everything. So people like really also are very curious on exploring beers above 7 degrees, 7 ABVs. So it's something that it's also that we do, but it's something that we can only do for seasonals because it's not that refreshing over here. So
gotcha. A little bit more celebratory.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you lager anything? Do you put stuff in tanks for months on end?
Yes. We have our national beer. We call it La Nacional. It's a light lager that we do. Also, we have a Kölsch that we do it for three weeks around. It's a beer that I made for my wife, actually. That's because... yeah, she's a curly girl. So and the word curly here in El Salvador, it's colocha. So it's kind of like also a word game. So yeah. that's something that I did for her. Now I'm right. Now I'm married to her.
Yeah. well, that seemed to have worked well for you.
Yes,
for you.
Yes.
yeah, some people give girls flowers and you give her a beer and that's what it takes. You know, well, so we're talking about these beers. We're talking about the climate, what, you know, what beers go best. You know, we're talking about hot and humid, but yet you have this stout that, you know, just tastes great because of the water profile from the volcanic region. What is it about the climate? What is it about kind of being there that just makes these things a little bit more refreshing, a little bit more enjoyable?
I mean, here we're not we don't have a beer culture that big. So okay. Every time that people relates beer, you relate it for like party and everything like that. That's something that like all the marketing that like everyone when we talk about beer, they call it like refreshing and everything. So you relate always beer as this. And in our case, we're trying to also exploit the thing about the taste and everything, that it's not just a beverage just to for parties and everything. It's something that you can enjoy. It's something that, well, it can refresh you and everything, but it's something that we want to give it a more premium place here in El Salvador. I don't know how can I explain, and I can I explain this, but yeah.
Well, so the existing beer culture in El Salvador, I would assume it's a lot like every country where it's a light, forgettable beer is the foundation. But yeah, when you start introducing craft beer like you guys are creating, that it just becomes something to kind of celebrate, to experience. How big, how prolific is craft beer within the culture? Are people really enjoying it and taking to it, or is it kind of like a still kind of slow growing?
I think every country has its own story. For us, it has been a little bit slow, actually, because we were one of the pioneer countries in Central America. But maybe because of the whole investment in this, it was really slow. Actually, for us, the pandemic was a big accelerator for the movement. A lot of people start doing home brewing and start selling their beer over social media. I mean, for like in Instagram, they start selling their beers. And this started like a second boom here. And like for 8 years or so, I don't know, it was, 8 years, we were the only ones, maybe with two more companies that started like 5 years after us. But in 2020, maybe like 7 or 8 brewers started their companies. And right now, they're beginning to have investments on their tap rooms and everything. So they started to be like more in the not so anonymous as in 2020, because the whole health department, it's like the regulatories and all that stuff. It's something that at first it's kind of scary, but these people are working their way through, and they're doing the things the right way. So right now we're having like this second boom. A lot of these breweries are having this, how can I say this? But they start placing their brands in the different like cities here. I mean, okay, it's a small country, but there are a lot of cities. I don't know that why, but like we call city like things that small towns.
So who are these craft beer drinkers? Are they younger people? Are they older people? Are they educated? Are they wealthy? Are they locals? Are they everybody? Are they just a few? How would you describe your demographic?
Well, I think people above their 20s are or like 25, 30s, that they're already like working mainly from the cities. They start to do this. There maybe are demographics a little bit in the economics, maybe in the middle high class. It's not so popular, actually.
So the craft beer in El Salvador isn't for everyone yet, or it is, but not everyone's drinking it yet, right?
Yes, it's actually something, because, like I told you before, it's because of how expensive it is to get the ingredients, because we don't do malts, we don't do hops. Yeast. We'll be starting some projects to gather yeast from the like wild yeast from our country. But yeah, basically it's just water for us. So it's kind of expensive to do that.
Gotcha. And so therefore, then the beers are expensive, and so that only those people who have a little bit of extra income can afford it. Is that where we're going with this?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like a pint might be, yeah, like the most like cheap ones that you can have are like $3.50 or so in some restaurants, but you can find them for $5 or $6. So for us, that's not so cheap.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So, if anyone from around the world, if I were to come and visit El Salvador and say, bring me to your nearest Cadejo or tap room or place that has beer, what can I expect? What am I looking at when we sit down? If you take me like, ooh, I got to take you to this place. If we sit down, what kind of beer we're going to have? What kind of food are we going to have? What other activities? How does this the whole beer drinking experience fit together?
Yeah, there's like, well, from starters, when you come here to El Salvador in the airport, we have our restaurant, one of our restaurants here. So
we can get started right away.
So it's something that, yeah, you can have like mostly bar food over there. But then you can go to one of the tap rooms that we have in the capital city. It's also like bar food. But then there are two like tourist places that we have. One in the beach that it's mostly for seafood, like cocktails, and it's really nice over there. And also we have one that it's in the mountains that it's more like a steakhouse. So you can go for different experience. We have like, how can I say it, but it's different ambiances for any of our tap rooms. Also for other people, you can go to like I don't know how to say it, but when I was in Bend, I really liked the thing that you can go to a place that it's really intimate. So there's a lot of tap rooms from, for example, these guys from MTZ. These guys have their really like intimate beer garden and you can go there. So if you don't want the whole kind of like a bar food vibe, you can go to all these places. So there's a lot of things. There are other tourist places that you can go. There's our city here called Santa Ana. There's a new brewery over there right now. It's called Puente Quemado or Burned Bridge that it's just open. Actually, I have to go there and and know the place. And also in Chalatenango, that it's another place in the north of the country that they are doing a really nice porter with geisha coffee, and it's really nice.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
So with all these different places and different different opportunities for different ambiance, if you were going to say, hey, Jeremy, welcome to the country, this is the flavor of El Salvador, what beer would you give me and what food would you start me off with? Or what would be the meal?
The meal are the pupusas here. Like this, that's the dish. It's a tortilla filled with a lot of cheese. It might sound like a quesadilla or something like that, but it's not. It's really different. It's more like a gordita, I think they call it in Mexico. But we have these tortillas with either cheese, refried beans, and chicharrón. I don't know, like pork belly. But
yeah.
So it's kind of like
fancy bacon.
yeah. So it's a really cheap food, but it's our traditional dish, and it has a lot of fat and everything because of the cheese. So for me, in that matter, like I would totally recommend from our point of view, like the IPA that we have. It's a kind of like old school IPA. Mm-hmm. It will sit really good for that. Like it would cleanse the whole cheese flavor and everything over there.
The palate, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, and I absolutely love, I was just talking about this yesterday. I love IPAs with any kind of cheese. There are certain cheeses that go better than others, but just IPA and cheese, which is why I love burgers, which is why I love pizza and blue cheese and everything else. That sounds like it would be fantastic. But is some of this food on the spicy side, like it would be, say, in like Mexico?
We're not in the spicy side as much as in Mexico. Like,
okay.
I mean, Mexico, they really like the
like their spicy. But,
yeah,
but I've noticed with you know, food from Belize and other place down there, it's not like Peruvian food, for example, too, is another one. But it's not about the spice; it's just about kind of a similar ingredients, but a totally different take. Is that kind of how El Salvador is too? It's reminiscent of, but not the same.
Yeah, I think the whole. Region from Panama to Mexico, we have a lot of dishes that are like the same, if you can say like that. Mm-hmm. But we have like some specialties, like I told you, like our tacos are the pupusas, and you can find it in the US a lot, because I know there's a lot of them, because when I live there, it's that. But we're kind of like mild on that. We use the maybe the cheeses that we used here are more on the salty side. We have a wide variety of cheeses that are really different to what everybody is used to. So I don't know, but like, for example, in Cadejo, we have this dish that we use, that it's the cheese cubes. And they're fried and everything, but the thing that makes it like unique is that we use a cheese that it's really from one of the regions from here. So it's a nice, how can I say it? It's a nice touch, and people love it to drink it with our more bitter beers.
Yeah. So then let's just assume that, okay, dinner is done. Bernie, you and I are going to go have another beer, maybe something a little bit from your special reserve, let's say. What would we do next? You know, would we listen to music? Would we go somewhere? What kind of cultural element goes great with kind of like an after dinner beer?
Yeah, here there's a lot of like the whole dancing stuff. Like a lot of people go dancing.
So you take me dancing afterwards, is that what you're saying?
I won't do that, but I mean that's like one of the popular things. And maybe the thing that it's really popular over here is the beach, because we have like really nice beaches. But at that time they do like this kind of like parties in, there's this place called Surf City, and
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, it's really nice, actually. There's a lot of like bohemian vibes over there. You can go have pizza. There's this other a brewery that's called Squirrel Eye Brewing that has a lot of really good IPAs and pale ales. And you can go there, go to what's the name of the bonfire? I think it's the fire in the beach and everything. So
yeah,
can do that.
Yeah, so a lot of this, you know, like we talked about in the beginning, that, you know, beer culture is kind of international, but what is particularly unique about El Salvador, their beer in comparison to not just other places in Latin America or South America, but compared to the US, compared to Australia, compared to Europe, compared to Africa? What makes the El Salvador beer drinking experience really unique and special from your perspective?
I think that it's more on not so in the flavor right now, but in the commitment that we are having right now as a country to to be learning and exploring on this and having this, how can I say this, but we really want people to learn and to discover the beer scene in El Salvador. So you will see a lot of the brewers like really having this hospitality, and you can see that in their tap rooms. Like people want you to feel comfortable, and that's something that I think in El Salvador and most of the countries we are very welcoming, and I think that's something that pairs really good with the beer.
I would agree. Beer tastes better when we're sitting around with new friends having a chat.
Exactly.
Case in point, this is how you and I ended up on this podcast in the first place. Is you exactly. And I were sitting at a table in Bend with a bunch of beer in front of us, and we looked up and smiled and said, "Hi, I'm Jeremy."
Exactly.
It's funny. I think I just think about how all that stuff happens. It's incredible. But so besides food, besides dancing, you know, and even in between beers, let's say we're not even worrying about beer yet, what types of things, if we, meaning people outside El Salvador came to the country, what types of activities, what types of things are we looking at doing? I mean, you mentioned the beach, so I'm probably going to go surf and spearfish, but you also mentioned mountains too. I mean, what's there for us to explore?
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about El Salvador is that it's really small, so you can go to a volcano at 9 a.m. and you can be at the beach at 10:30. So it's like, it's really compact, very dense country where you can see beaches.
And a lot of altitude.
Altitude is not that big. Like the biggest mountain we have, it's like 3,000 meters, so maybe like,
but still going from the beach to the volcano, I mean, there's a little bit of climbing to do.
Yeah, but I mean, it's that's something that we really like. And since when I was in the US, like I'm going to the bank and then I have to do this, so it was like I had to do like three stuff in the day. And that took me the whole day. But here, like, you can do like 9 or 10 and like you can do it like really quick because everything is really, really near. A lot of like the cultural also scenes, like the Mayan ruins and the whole stuff are like less from an hour from the capital city that it's San Salvador. Mm-hmm. So you can actually in 1 week know a lot of our country because you will see culture, you can see like towns that are like really, really nice because they have a lot of like arts and everything, and it's less than 2 hours, 2 hour drive, less than that.
Yeah.
So it's really, really good to come here. Beaches, mountains, volcanoes, lakes, everything is really close.
What are my favorite things to do before I have a beer is do some sort of sport. What are the main sports that you guys play in El Salvador?
I think
football would be number one, right?
Yeah. that's the king one in every American country, I think.
In every country but the US.
Yeah, no, and actually I think Nicaragua, but right now they're starting to play a lot of good soccer, but their first sport is actually baseball in Nicaragua. That's something
fair enough.
Yeah.
I think it's a water polo in Croatia, which is awesome, but you know,
yeah,
that's a different story.
Well, actually, yeah, for us it's football, and actually we are really proud of our beach soccer team. They got in the semifinals from the World Cup, like, well, what was like 12 years ago, so it was a big boom, and that's something that's why we developed this surf city stuff and the whole beach vibe. We were the host of the Surf World Cup. And also surfing, it's something that we are really proud that we're trying to push forward a lot. That's why we have Surf City.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a great name, and that makes perfect sense. So there's a lot to do, a lot to explore when anyone comes to visit. But getting back to the beer, is it easy to find different styles of beer? I mean, granted, you've got what you have at Cadejo, but if we were to go to a bottle shop or a store or some other tap room, is finding good beer from around the world easy or difficult?
For us, it's kind of difficult, and that's something that's also has us a little bit like slow on the creativity side here right now, because we don't have access to a lot of those styles. So every time a brewer starts like, okay, I'm going to do this, like everybody's really hyped because it's like, okay, this is the first take, or like this is the first gose. Mm-hmm. The first gose from El Salvador. So like everybody, like right now we are the pioneers in this kind of stuff. So
okay, yeah.
That's really nice. But actually also it's like kind of like it's hard, because sometimes there's a lot of beers. And actually when I was over there in Oregon, I tried a lot of beers that I never tried before. So it's something it's not that easy.
First, what are some of the beers that you tried you've never had before?
It was Oud Bruin that I tried over there.
Okay.
Red Flanders, it's something that I know it. I've tried in other places, but you cannot find it that easily over here.
Sure. So as a brewer, and you're traveling and tasting these beers from elsewhere, or at least like interpretations of other beers, and let's say you go back and you're like, I want to brew a gosa that I tried from Germany, or Catarina Sour from Brazil, or a Flanders from, if you're bold enough to try it and you have the infrastructure to do it, mm-hmm. It's one thing for you to brew it and really work on trying to nail that style and get it just right. But it's something else entirely to educate your beer drinkers on, hey, no, really, this is an amazing style I had when I was in Oregon from Belgium. You need to try it. This is what to expect. How do you balance those two things of trying to brew it right and let people know what it's like?
Well, actually, first we were doing like this tiny club sometimes, like people that are really like into beer, and we're trying to get the education on the styles that we have. And then there's like most of these people that come to this like pairing the dinners that we do, for example, in Cadejo. And some people tell me like, hey, can I add you in my Instagram? And I was like, I'm like, okay. And they're like, every time I post something, they're like, they want to be like involved. So how can I say this? But it's something that I think it will start like really slow, and hopefully it will get stronger. But for example, the beers that we, I don't know how to say this, but we rescue from that thing that we did the last day at the Beer Awards.
Yeah,
the one that you gave me actually was really awesome. And I gave it, like, I brought it here in El Salvador into my like group of friends. And I asked people in social media, like, hey guys, who wants to try a new beer? And you have to do this kind of stuff. And people with the mixed fermentation beers, for example, it's something that it's not that common here. Nobody does it because we're kind of like scared of the whole contamination in the brewery stuff. So
yeah.
So it's something that people is like, what's this? Why is so like funky or sour? And that kind of, that's, it's really interesting to see the faces of people trying a beer for the first time.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that either don't like it the first time or they're not sure how they feel about it the first time, but it kind of begs a second sip and then a third. And then
exactly,
and, you know, and then maybe that's where you kind of like you hook them and you're like, okay, now let's try this.
Exactly. Right? I mean, like the first sip that they take is like, I don't know about this, but like 10 minutes later, you see them grabbing the bottle and start serving some more. And yeah, that's it.
Because I think there's certain beers, you know, there's certain beers that we just love from the beginning. We drink it. We love it. I want more. But there's certain beers, at least I've had this, where there's certain beers where I'm not sure how I feel about it, but they're very cerebral. They get me thinking. I just keep thinking about this beer. I can't stop thinking about this beer. I'm not sure if I like it yet or not, but I'm still thinking about it to the point where I go back and revisit it. And I've spent so much time thinking about it where it's just like, now it's like an old friend that I don't want to hang out with every single day. But I want to spend some time with this friend every once in a while, you know,
exactly.
Certain beers like that. Yeah. From your experience, and this is, you know, when we talk about culturally speaking, if you have guests come to your brewery and you're in charge of creating this entire experience for them. I mean, for you, what's important when we talk about defining and delivering a great experience, an El Salvadorian beer experience, what's important to you? How do you define that? How do you deliver it?
I think like I told you before, I mean, it's something that we are really proud is the hospitality that we have. And when people come to the brewery, they want to take the whole vibe that we have in our team, because it's also, this is not like a country related thing, but for our proud also in Cadejo, it's that we want them to feel welcome, and the whole Cadejo thing, that it's something that I forgot to tell you, but Cadejo, it's something that we try to sell a lot, because it's one of our legends that we have here in in Central America, but we in El Salvador, we think it's ours, that the Cadejo, it's this kind of like dog that has like two versions, a white one and a black one. And the white one is like the friendliest one, the good one. The black one is the evil one, or something like that.
Yeah,
but it has a lot of like versions of the story. But one of the most known versions is that the Cadejo takes care of the people that usually goes at night, have their drinks. So somehow we want to do that. We want to take care of the people that comes to our bar, because we are the Cadejos that are taking care of them, actually. So
I like that. That's I like the idea of that, where, you know, kind of a good angel, bad angel, good dog, yeah, exactly. Bad dog. But hopefully it's the good dog that is there taking care of me when I finally arrive, and not the bad one.
Yeah, they say the white one is for the female, and the black one for the males. It's there, like I'm telling you, like every person that comes to the bar, they tell me in my town this is the version, like, and they start telling like, this is the evil one, that's the good one. Or this is the one that, how can I say it, at least, is the one that takes care of the males, and that this one takes over the females, or the opposite. Sometimes they tell me, no, the white one is the bad one. So I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So every town has it.
I think it would be good just to kind of insert a little, just quick info for anyone who's listening or watching this and doesn't have any experience with generically speaking, Latin cultures. My experience with Latin cultures and study of Spanish and other things is the culture traditionally separates out, the words, the culture, the beliefs, the myths are all separated into masculine and feminine. And that's not a modern thing of men versus women or anything like that. This is just a masculine energy, a feminine energy. And so I just want to insert that in there. You can tell me if I'm wrong or add anything else to that, but I think that'd be a good thing just to kind of share about Latin culture.
Yeah, we have like right now, because Spanish has this singularity in that we have words that have gender. So it's something really, really hard, because like the chair, it's female, the table is female, and all that stuff. And actually right now this movement of having the gender thing, it's it's having a lot of movements of people like trying to see a way of talking without involving a gender related stuff. So a more neutral approach.
Yeah. And I thought about that in relation to speaking Spanish and Latin cultures, where it's like, we're talking about the chair, there's la silla, right?
Exactly.
But you know, why is the chair feminine? Why is the chair female? Why can't it be like Elsia or I don't know, Losia? You know, it's like,
I don't know. Right?
I don't know.
Something weird.
But I can appreciate that, you know, while we're trying to adjust and respect people for who they are, there's some long-lived cultural differences and language differences that are not easily immediately changed. So
yeah, exactly.
That's an interesting little cultural thing there going on. So so that being said, let's finish up with some fun questions. Bernie, tomorrow, because of your contributions to Beer Society, you get to be king of the beer world for a day. You get to be El Rey, not La Rey. So you're king of the beer world for an entire day. What is the first thing you would change?
Like around the world?
Yes. Yes, Your Highness.
Wow. Oh, I would really like to have more access to the ingredients, and people could have more access, because it's something that I think we lack a lot. A lot of people with a lot of creativity that, because of these constraints, they cannot bring us like very good beer. That will be my take.
Interesting. So we need a global supply network, so that so you can brew like
researchers doing new varieties of hop that can grow in tropical weather, malts that like starches. Actually, that's something that we just did with one of the universities here. The yuca beer, beer made with yuca, and a lot of people over here are exploring a lot of starches. So, yeah, it's something that it's going to happen.
I believe it is, and I'm sure we will find a way. We can put a drone on Mars. I'm sure we can find a hop that will grow in the tropics. I just hope it's not the same hop that we can get in other places. I hope it's a unique hop that you can only grow in the tropics, that we cannot grow in other places. Cause I really would love to see this regionality again. But you know, I'm not the king, you are. But at the, at the end of your royal day, Your Highness, we're going to send you anywhere on earth for a beer and a meal. Where would you go and what would you have?
Because I haven't been there, I would really love to go to Belgium, because it's one of my dreams to go over there. And I think it's the mussels with fries. That's the name of that dish. Mussels. I don't know.
Yeah. It's on the tip of my tongue, but the moules et frites. I think I ruined that pronunciation, but yeah, don't quote me on that, but yeah, they're fantastic.
Yeah. And having a saison that it's made over there, like a plain saison, but well made. I don't know, that I would really enjoy that.
That sounds amazing. Another important question is, I mean, you've devoted your career to this. Why does good beer matter so much to you?
That's a really good question. I mean, I had this dream since I tried my first craft beer. One of my mom's friends in Las Vegas gave it to me, and it was amazing to see something different than, I don't know if I can say brands right now, but sure. I mean, like the, like a Budweiser. I was like really like with Budweiser, Bud Light in that trip that we had over to Vegas, and it was my first beer that I had, and it was a moose on the label, and I was like, what is this beer?
And was and it the, and was it moose drool?
No, I don't even recall that, and it's something. Okay. That, but the guy was like really proud, and he told me it's something I made, and it, and oh. For me it was, you can actually do beer. It's like I was like 18 or something, and since then I was like, oh, I have to do this. And when I came, when I got to the US to study things that actually got me closer to beer, not to the things that I studied actually, but
sounds familiar.
So I met this guy in my internship that I went to do that over there, and he told me like, yeah, come and see how beer is done. And it was life changing. And I said, this is what I want to do for life. And when I came here to El Salvador, and I couldn't find anything, I went to a hardware store and I made my first like chiller coil and all that stuff from pure hardware store things. It was amazing. I mean, I did it myself, and I think it's something that I don't know. I really enjoyed, because nobody believed that I could do it, and I did it.
That's a great story. That's a great answer. I want to linger on that, but I'm not going to. I want to get to the next thing and respect your time. But for a lot of young people are entering the beer world. They're of age. They're almost of age, to be honest. But there are a lot of younger people who are coming into drinking. And, you know, like we all did when we're young, is all about, you know, drinking and party and the effect and finding ways to deal with a hangover. But anyone who's been in the industry for a while, anyone who respects beer and other beverages, to be frank, knows that there's more to it. But the younger people who haven't found that yet, you know, whatever they choose to drink, what advice would you give them? What would you tell them about, you know, as they begin their career in drinking?
Well, I think that it's really alluring to be drinking a lot of like cheap beer and getting drunk and all that stuff. But I think that also you can like enjoy the good things from the start, like the beers that maybe some of us, like for example, in my personal experience, I didn't have the chance to do it. So explore the variety that right now it's available for them, and not just stick to just one beer. I mean, explore the whole aisle on the beer in the supermarket. That's something that I think they should do from start.
That's great advice. Easier questions for you. Anyone who's listening, anyone who's watching, if they want to know more, how can they connect with Cadejo or find you on Instagram or anything like that?
Okay, for Cadejo, it's the Instagram, it's @CervezaCadejo. There you can find all about our venues, like offers and everything that we have, the whole experience that we offer. And in my case, you can find me at Bernie's Beer. It's Bernie with a Y.
I'm gonna put this in the show notes, but and then last thing, do you have any final? You probably just said them, but do you have any final words? Anything you want to say to cap thing off? Anything I didn't ask that you'd like people to know?
Well, I think it's really important to know a lot of the cultures that you can go, and I think sometimes there are a lot of countries that maybe we cannot see it a lot in a lot of the MTV or stuff like that. But I think you should take a risk and explore these kind of countries. And I would really like a lot of the people coming from the US to visit El Salvador, visit Central America, because not just for the beer, but because we have a really rich culture. You can see it. For us in Central America, we have this like union, how can I say this, like feeling that we have, that we started as a country, actually, like Guatemala, Costa Rica, Honduras, and everybody. We were a country, but we separated because the whole how can I say this?
Just the politics of it.
Yeah, politics of it. Yeah. And it's something that we're really proud that we really like brothers. And that's why in the beer matter, we try to stick together. That's why we made, like, for example, the competition that we held every year, the homebrewers competition from Central America, the C4, that's the name of it. So I would really like people come in here and visit the whole region, because you can do it really quickly. It's really simple. And there's a lot of bad marketing that some of these countries have, but I think the good stuff, it's on top of that. So that will be good.
Awesome. Well, I'm grateful that you came onto this podcast to kind of share the story of the region, of the beer, of the people, of the culture. And I'm grateful that we ended up sitting at a table judging IPAs in Bend. Just because, you know, in years to come, I think we'll stay connected. And, you know, when you visit, and someday when I visit, I'd look forward to having more conversations and more beers and just, you know, learning how we are all human beings, but how we kind of live a separate kind of experience. And it's incredible. But thank you for coming on to the podcast.
It's a pleasure.
At the end of a long day or a long week, I prefer to unwind with people I love, to have an interesting conversation, a great meal, and a good beer. We don't have to travel to El Salvador to put the focus on the people, the place, or the moment, but it helps. In the next episode, we head to the Great White North to get a tour and a taste of Canadian craft. I'm on a virtual tour of the craft and culture of beer around the globe. I've put Good Beer Matters on video so I can take you along for the ride. If you know of a person, a place, or a beer story that needs to be told, let me know. Meanwhile, grab a beer, hang out with friends, and let your world open up. Thank you for listening. Cheers.